Oh, you guys. They sprung that on me yesterday when I walked in here. They sprung that on me. So good to be back. Good morning, church.
Morning.
Morning to those of you worshiping online. I'm so glad that you're there. I kind of wish you were here because I missed you so much. I want to start off with some thank yous. Thank you so much to you as a church. You are an amazing church. I can now personally appreciate that you support sending your ordained pastors on sabbatical once every several years. That's the first time I've been able to do that in 20 years as a pastor. It was amazing. Thank you for that gift and that time. I want to thank our pastoral team. When I was gone, led by Kathy Burkholder, Jeremiah Raymer, John Phillips, did an incredible job. All the guest speakers, so Kathy, Jeremiah, Ryan, Bill, the three guest preachers that you have. Did you appreciate those guys this summer? They did a phenomenal job. I watched all their messages. Really, really great job and fun to worship. But man, did I miss you, and I'll get into that in just a little bit. Lastly, I want to thank you as a church. You are an amazing church. You're a generous church. You're a loving church. I thank you for the way that you love, that you give, that you serve, that you lead. This church is sunk without you volunteering and joining the mission of God here to reach people for Christ, and you just keep it going, whether I'm here or not. And so give yourselves a round of applause. Thank you so much. You guys, you ready to dive into some scripture? Romans 8:28, a very well-known verse. Here's what it says. And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. A great verse. Perhaps you've heard of it. If you're new to the church or new to scripture, this is one that gets quoted a lot. But one of the ways that it gets taught most often is the emphasis is on the second half. God works for the good of those who love him. Yeah, I love God. God works for my good. God works for me, who have been called according to his purpose. I've been called into a relationship with God, so I know God is working everything for me. I really think the best part of that verse is the first part. It's an incredible promise. It's an incredible truth. It is the big idea of this whole message, of this whole sermon, and that's this right here. God is always working. In all things, God works. If you agree with that, say amen. God is always working. He's always working in your life, and he's always working in my life, and he's always working in this church, and he's always working on the eastern seaboard, even if your senior pastor is there for a few weeks. And he's always working back here, and he's working in your heart, and he's working in your family, and he's working in your kids. God is always in your unchurched friends and neighbors, in the person in the cube next to you at work, whether they know Jesus or not. God is always working. That's the big idea. God is always working. In 1999, a movie came out. You probably don't even remember it. It was a follow-up from the guy who directed When Harry Met Sally, a guy named Rob Reiner. And the name of the movie was The Story of Us. Raise your hand if you remember it. I didn't think so. It was a flop. It starred Bruce Willis and Michelle Pfeiffer. Their marriage was deteriorating. They had two kids. It cost $50 million to make that movie. It only grossed $58 million, so by all accounts, that's a flop. But even in the midst of flops, God is always working. And here's how he worked through that one in my life. I remember seeing that in 1999, and I was years away from being married or having children, but there were multiple scenes in that where they showed that family around a dinner table. And around their dinner table, they did this thing every time called high-low. They would share their high and their low of the day. And the reason they did that, so I read a book a long time ago. It's one of the best books on marriage I've ever read. It's called Love and Respect. We've had a Love and Respect conference here, Emerson Eggerich. He's the doctor. He wrote that book. And he says, in relationships, you do things like that. You give a report to build rapport. You give a report to build rapport. This is what you do. You give a report to build rapport. And that's what high-low is. It's an easy way for a family to give a report on the day to build rapport, even among the family. And I was like, I love that. And I remember thinking in 1999, when I get married, when I have children, we're going to do that. That's going to be a part of our dinner table, and it has been. We do a high and a low at almost every dinner and many meals that we do. I've carried that into small groups. Men's fraternity starts with high-low here. Every small group I've been, there's a high and a low where we share. It's just open sharing time. You give a report to build rapport. So I thought, why not, on this first message back, why not bring that as the structure of the message? I want to I'm going to give a report to rebuild rapport between you, the church that I love and miss, and me, the pastor who was away for a couple of weeks. And we're going to start with some highs and some lows and then life lessons. And just to give you some bearings for the message, it's going to be about 10 minutes of highs, about 5 minutes of a low. Believe it or not, there was a low this summer. And then about 20 minutes of these life lessons that God taught me, and I think maybe wants to teach our church in time while I was away on sabbatical, because God is always what? Working. And so let's start with the highs. The highs, the runway for these highs actually started about 8 months ago when Bridget and I, we do this thing every year at the end of the year, so late December, we get together and we start to pray about what our one word is going to be for the next year, kind of a theme. And so we prayed and we came back and we shared, and she came back and she said, my word is moments. And I said, well, my word is experiences, because we knew this sabbatical was coming up, and so we wanted to create moments and experiences for our family. And so our highs are all around these moments and experiences that we are able to create and enjoy with our family this summer. Now, we had to make one difficult decision. Maybe you've made it before. It's not super popular among this valley, but we found that this was a decision during the summer that actually freed us up to have these moments and experiences, and here's what we did. We pulled our boys completely out of summer sports for the first time ever. That's like, oh my gosh, are you crazy? Maybe we were, but it was the best decision we made this summer, and our boys loved it. But that's what we did. We pulled them out of summer sports. I said, I know you guys are going to be the next Michael Phelps and the next, you know, Javier Baez, but that's okay. We're going to take a summer off because the cream always rises to the top. You're going to be just fine. We're going to create some moments and some experiences. And so the biggest thing we did three family trips, and I did three one-on-one father trips with my boys, and then we, by the grace of God, there was 1 week this summer where all three boys were out on camps, and Bridget and I had a one-week staycation at home, just Bridget and I, and it was glorious. So three and one. Let me show you some pictures of these highs. The biggest high was a trip to the East Coast. On the first day of the summer, we flew to Florida, and we did a Florida to New York road trip in a minivan. And it was unbelievable. We started in Jekyll Island, Georgia for a couple nights, and then we went to Savannah and rode bikes and had ice cream at Leopold's, and it was fantastic. From Savannah, you can go to the next slide. From Savannah, then we crossed over the Georgia state line into Charleston, South Carolina. Charleston is like my new favorite city. We spent 4 nights there, and it was awesome. From Charleston, we went then to North Carolina, the Raleigh-Durham area, for just 1 night. And it was great because it was in the middle. We got to see Duke one day and North Carolina the next day, and they were fantastic. We also stayed with friends, and were able to have a home-cooked meal and do all of our laundry. It was fantastic. And then we left North Carolina and went to the, actually, we stayed in North Carolina, but we went to the Outer Banks of North Carolina. This is as far east as you can get on the coast, this little narrow strip of land about 90 miles long, and we went to this tiny little town called Nag's Head. Anybody ever been to Nag's Head? It's amazing, one of my new favorite places. And we, in the midst of this 3-week road trip, we had a vacation within the vacation right on the beach. And that was our play. You could jump right off there onto the dunes and go right out, and that's what we did. You've heard that that country song by Luke Bryan, Sunrise, Sunburn, Sunset, Repeat. That was our 3 days. That's what we did. And you might go, gosh, that you stayed on the beach. That looks like a really nice place. No, it wasn't. It was the Seafoam Motel. And it is like a national landmark, and it was made in like the 50s or the 60s. It hasn't been touched since. It, just to show you what type of place this is, I think this is a real shipwreck boat, but it says right here on the sign, we wash bedspreads every time. Like, I mean, come on. Like, it would, doesn't you just start to itch a little bit? Just read that. But it was still, it was awesome. It was awesome to be there, and from then we hopped in the car and we left North Carolina, grabbed our Chick-fil-A, and headed up to Charlottesville, Virginia. We toured UVA, and this is a picture from Monticello, Thomas Jefferson's house, and then from there we went up to, we just spent 1 night there, and then we went up to Washington, D.C. We went to Washington, D.C., spent 2 nights in D.C. We toured all around Washington, D.C. That was a blitz, man. but beautiful. Loved Washington. Got a nice tour of the Capitol. And then we ended this trip of all trips. This is the longest by far. This is over twice as long as any family trip we've ever done, we've ever tried. But we had three awesome days in New York. We biked through Central Park. We took in a Yankees game. We walked all around Times Square, across the Brooklyn Bridge. Super cool. One quick story. We walked across the Brooklyn Bridge and came around, and because someone told us to do this, hey, sit on a curb and get pizza at Juliana's Pizza, and it's amazing. And so I was like, okay, we did that. And we're sitting there on the curb, and right in front of us, just in the midst of a bunch of other people, just totally inconspicuously, watch this guy that I didn't even recognize. And my 14-year-old son, Trevor, goes, that's Shawn Mendes. He's like a major pop. He's like almost in the Justin Bieber in terms of like talent and recognizability. But I didn't recognize him. And he goes, that's Shawn Mendes. And I go, really? He walked right up to him with Owen. And he goes, hey, Shawn, I really enjoy your music. Hey, can I get a picture? And he got a picture with him. That was awesome. So that was one of his highs. You know, we did plenty of walking. We did a nice little boat tour out. You could see the Statue of Liberty. It was fantastic. And oh my gosh, how did that get in there? That happens from time to time on a family trip. Anyway, so those our family trips, those were highs. We took two other family trips a little bit later in the summer. One, and they're both in around water, lakes. We went to with a group of friends to Lake Coeur d'Alene and stayed there. Never been to that part of Idaho. It was fantastic. And then just a couple of weeks ago, we did what we normally do every summer, which we spent a week in Minnesota so that we could see Bridget's side of the family. And that's one of my favorite spots. Their parents live on a lake there in White Bear Lake. It was awesome. Those were our three family trips. Super highs. The other highs were the one-on-one trips with my kids. This is, for you parents, grandparents, this is like the new discovery of my life. One-on-one, extended one-on-one trips with your kids. I went to each of my boys and said, this is a unique season of your life and my life, and so I'm going to take you on a trip, just you and Dad, and we can create it together. It's built around your personality. What do you want to do? My oldest son, Trevor, said, I want to go deep sea fishing. He's really into fishing. I said, we're going to do it. So we headed down to Southern California. We went deep sea fishing. This 14-year-old boy of mine, who is now only 1 inch shorter than me, he's going to pass me up. And speaking of passing me up, we fished for 2 different days, and he outfished me 14-7. I looked at him. I go, don't you ever do that again. Like, this is not, but we had so much fun. We fished a bunch. We went to the beach. We body surfed. We boogie boarded. We rented little beach toys. I mean, it was just a blast. And this was precious, precious time with Trevor. It wasn't perfect, I'll be honest. And the reason it wasn't perfect, and this is a regret that I have of that time, is that I wish I would have said at the beginning, let's just completely put away our cell phones the whole trip. Seriously. I wish I had that part back. So for the next one of those, we're going to put away the cell phones because I just thought they were out a little bit too much. But man, do I just love that time with Trevor. The next trip after that was with Cole, my youngest. He's 10 years old. So we went to San Diego. We went to the zoo one day because he loves animals. We also went to Legoland for another day. He's kind of at the top end of Legoland in terms of age-wise. We rented a Jeep. We got a great deal on a Jeep, so we rode around with the top down. This smile was on his face the entire time. The entire time. All 3 days. And then the last day was a beach day where we rented bikes and surfboards and just made amazing memories through rocks and shells on the beach. I mean, this was precious time. The last one-on-one trip was with Owen. On the backside of our Minnesota trip with a family, I realized that Chicago was only about a 5.5-hour drive from Minnesota, like from here to LA. So we rented a car and went to Chicago. We got a friend of ours said, hey, we're gone. You can stay at our place. So we stayed there. It was amazing. An old buddy of mine who is a coach for the Cubs got us tickets to the Cubs game at Wrigley Field. It was a lifetime memory. We got passes to go on the field before the game. Owen's like, I want a ball, I want ivy from the wall, and I want a Cubs win. And unbelievably, he got all three. He got a ball, he got it signed by Ben Zobrist, and it looked like they were going to lose. They were down 6-1 in the sixth, then they started to come back, and in the bottom of the ninth, they hit back-to-back home runs, came back from 6-4 and won 7-6 on a walk-off homer, back-to-back home runs. Amazing, amazing. And what's crazy is the one guy who he got a signature from before the game, the one guy, he had gotten called up from the minors that morning. He's the guy who hit the first home run. So it was incredible. We also went to a White Sox game the next day. Not the same environment. Sorry for you White Sox fan. But the important thing was, that's why I put this picture, we were together the whole time. We did everything together. Just huge, huge highs with family time. Those were the major highs. Now, there was a low. Those are the highs. And even in the highs, God is what? Working. But he also works in the lows. And here was the low. On July 1st, exactly the halfway point. So maybe God had some, I don't know. On the halfway point, 1 month in, I woke up on the morning that I came back from my trip with Cole. And ready for this, I was lying in bed and I could not move. I was on my back like this. And I was like, Bridget. And I couldn't move. And ready for this? I couldn't move for 4 days. Here's what happened. I herniated a disc in my back. L4, L5, I don't know if it was running on the beach barefoot. I don't even know what happened, but it was the most excruciating pain, like from right back here and then around the hip and down the leg. It's just like all you guys know this. How many people have ever suffered anything like this? Yes. I was like, I'm getting old. I just turned 44. I mean, it's over. I was like, I know, this is just a joke. I didn't say that last night. I thought I'd try it today. But this was the low. And on the fourth day, I was like, I couldn't move. I couldn't sleep. So but we had this trip to Idaho that we had planned for like 18 months. It was a guy who was trying to get us to go there as a thank you for doing his wedding. And we'd put it off. And so that morning I woke up, I couldn't move. And Bridget was like, we need to cancel. I'm like, no, just get me into the car and get me onto the plane. But I was in such pain. And so here's a picture of the low. I got wheelchaired through the airport. Bridget went to take a picture and I turned away. And then my kids all the way down, my boys all the way down to the plane. And then I got off. It took like 8 minutes to walk 8 rows. And for that trip to Coeur d'Alene, I know I was smiling in the picture. I could barely walk. I was just sitting, watching my kids play. It was a lot of joy from that. But eventually I got a cortisone shot about halfway through the month. It really didn't kick in until last week. And now I'm probably about 80%. This leg is like weak compared to this one. So I'm not feeling great. Appreciate your prayers. That was a low. But there's a great lesson I'll get to in just a little bit from that too. So highs, lows. And now let me get to these life lessons. If you're a note taker, there are 5 of them. You probably want to take this out. Here are the life lessons, because whether it's the highs or the lows, God is always what? He's always working. And here's how he worked in my life. He gave me these 5 life lessons. They're not in order of importance. They're actually in order of how and when. It's almost chronologically how God revealed them to me throughout the 2 months that I was gone. And so here's the first one. You might want to write this one down. Grateful is a great place to be. Grateful is a great place to be. I'm reminded of 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 16 through 18, where it says this: be joyful always, pray continually, give thanks in all circumstances, highs and lows, for this is God's will for you in Christ Jesus. Without question, the most common occurrence on our trips and all these experiences throughout the summer was Bridget and I, or the boys and I, would turn to each other and we would just be like, isn't this awesome? Like, this is so awesome that we get to do this. This is so awesome that we get this time. And this gratefulness, this spirit of gratitude really pervaded the entire summer for us. And I remember thinking, why does it feel so good to be so grateful all of the time? And God reminded me, it's because this is God's will for us. Give thanks in all circumstances, for this is God's will for you. The reason it feels so good, Tyler, is because you're in God's will when you're grateful. So my question for you is, are you a grateful person? No, I mean that. Do you consider yourself to be a grateful person? There are students in here, junior high students, high school students. Are you grateful? Have you thought about your life, this this beautiful area you get to grow up in, the parents who do their best to provide for you and love you. I know they're not perfect. The schools you get to go to, the schools you'll eventually get to go to. Are you grateful? Young adults, singles, are you grateful for this unique stage in your life? Married couples, are you grateful? I know it's hard to be married, and you're not married to a perfect person, and neither is he, neither is she. But are you grateful? Parents, grandparents, it's hard. The days are long, but the years are short. Are you grateful? Because it goes so fast. Are you grateful? And so my follow-up question to that be, for what are you grateful? For what are you grateful? We have so much to be grateful for. Years ago, I was struggling. I was in this season where I was struggling. I met with my mentor, and I go, I'm struggling with focusing on the things I'm grateful for with my wife. I find myself in my mind, and sometimes it leaks out of my mouth, what I don't appreciate. Am I alone in that? And here's what he said. Here's what I want you to do. He goes, get out a 3x5 index card and write down, like, I want you to write down, pen to paper, the top 10 things that you're grateful for about your wife. And so I did. I took it out, and he goes, put it in your wallet. I don't even carry a wallet anymore, but I keep it in my car. And I was like, this was at least 10, 15 years ago, at least. I think I still have it. So I went there yesterday, and I always kept it in this, and here it is. And I pull it out whenever I'm struggling, and you can see how old it is. Like, it's worn out on one side. I don't know if you can zero in on this, but that's my top 10 list of the reasons I'm grateful for Bridget. I'll just read them. She loves God. She loves people. She's an amazing wife and mom. She serves constantly. She has a pure heart. She's a talented chiropractor. She's motivated to grow. She's humble. She's funny and fun. She's very unselfish. That's the top 10 reasons I'm grateful for Bridget. And when I struggle to appreciate her, to remember why I'm so grateful, I just pull that thing out and I go, oh yeah, she's amazing. For what are you grateful? Grateful is a great place to be. That was lesson number one. Number two, put it on the screen for you. We're made to do life together. We are made to do life together. Psalm 133 at verse 1 says this, how good and pleasant it is when God's people live together in unity. We're made to do life together. Here's what happened. We left on this big trip, and it was a 3-week trip, and I thought, man, it'll be easy to leave work behind. It'll be easy. And to be honest, it kind of was to leave behind the work. Now, my staff helped me. They said, we want to take email off of your phone. So I took my work email off my phone, and I could tell you in front of the Lord right here, in 2 months, I never checked my work email one time. I was out. Yeah. Not one time. So it was kind of easy. It was surprisingly easy to leave the work behind because I was investing so much in my family. But here was the weird thing. By the second week, we're like halfway up the eastern seaboard, and I turn to Bridget, and I go, we got a problem here. She goes, what? I go, I really miss the people. I missed you. I missed our team. I missed our staff. I missed our small groups. I missed my men's group. I missed my neighbors. Like, I missed the people. And it started off like, oh, I missed, you know, the people who are so easy. By week 3, I even missed those of you who are not so easy. And I was like, I love these people, and I miss them, and I miss the messiness of it, and I miss the give and take, and when we disagree, and then we find a godly resolution, I missed it all. And then by week 4, I was like, I don't know how I'm going to make it another month. And then the back thing happened, and then I got a little bit better. And so, like, by week 6, 2 weeks ago, I was like, how am I going to wait 2 more weeks? I was like a bull. I'm like, let me at him. I got to get back to him. Because we were made to do life together. Paul says it this way in Romans chapter 1 at verse 11. He's talking to the Roman church. He wants to get to that church in Rome so bad. He wants to see that church family. And he goes, I long to see you so that I can impart some spiritual gift to make you strong. That is, that you and I would be mutually encouraged by one another's faith. That's what I missed. And it was the Lord was going, he was this sweet surprise. It was like, do you see how much you love the people of your church? And I was like, gosh, I miss them. I do. I love you. It was a sweet surprise because we're made to, and it was so strong. This one kept coming up throughout the whole summer. It was the dominant, it was the number one thought that was dominant. And I go, Lord, is there something more? And here I was in my quiet times. I was just in the book of Ephesians the whole summer. And you might go, well, that book's not really about community or life together. And it's not. But when I finished, I started over again. It's about unity in the church, yes. And it's about the amazing gospel. And Paul just lays out the gospel. It's a beautiful book. Maybe it'll turn into a series next year. I'm not quite sure. But he used that as a launching pad to just think about you and the necessity of Christian community, of doing life together, so much so that at some point the Lord was like, this is your first series when you come back. So next week, we start a four-week series called Life Together, The Power of Community. We're going to talk about what keeps us from community, but then why we need it, and what are the benefits of it, and one message is going to be how to thrive in the midst of your community, not just here, but at work, and at school, and among your teams, and we're going to look at the power of community, because we're made to do life together. If you believe that, say amen. Third lesson, this one was hard. Empathy for people in pain. In the four days that I couldn't move, God was like, okay, while you're down, let me remind you of a couple things. 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 3 and 4. Praise be to the God and Father, our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort. God's saying, I'm still here comforting you, but remember, who comforts us in all our troubles, the highs and the lows, God is always, so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves receive from God. And God was saying, yeah, I'm comforting you, but here's what I want to remind you of. And the other one that came to my mind, it's not on the screen, but is Romans 12:15, which says, we're to rejoice with those who rejoice, and we're to weep with those who weep. What God showed me while I was on my back, unable to move, in the worst pain I've ever felt in my life by a mile, is here's what he showed me. You're really good at rejoicing with those who rejoice. You're not so good at weeping with those who weep. He said, Tyler, you have a weakness in the way that you love people. You have a weakness in the way that you pastor people. Namely, that weakness is you need more empathy for people who are in pain. There's this story in Genesis 32 where Jacob is wrestling with an angel, a man who turns out to be God, and he wrestles through the night, and eventually God presses on his, touches his hip and kind of like, ugh, stuns him a little bit, and Jacob holds on, and finally God goes, okay, you got to let go, and Jacob says, I will not let you go until you bless me. When I was wrestling around on the ground, I felt like the Lord was saying, I'm not here to bless you, I'm here to teach you. You don't get to get up until you realize you need more empathy for people who are dealing with stuff like this. In the highs and the lows, God is always working. So a few days after that, I was feeling a little bit better, and I limped to a lunch with my sister. We were celebrating our birthdays. We both have summer birthdays. And she asked me how I was doing, and I explained this lesson that God was teaching me through this pain. It was like, oh my gosh, and in four awful days, Amanda, I said, I feel like God has dropped the scales in my eyes, and I see why people are so depressed when they deal with chronic pain. I see why people are so anxious. I see why people get addicted to different meds in order to get through life. I see why people want to check out. It's like God is showing me, don't you see how many people, there's so many people who are struggling. And I just began to pray for them and pray for you. I know this is some of you. I explained this to Amanda, my sister, who for the last 5 years has had multiple surgeries, shoulder, knee, struggled with chronic pain. And she was all dressed up for our birthday lunch, and I looked across the table as I explained this, and she's just bawling. And I stopped. I go, are you okay? And she goes, this is what she says to me. She goes, obviously, you're my brother. I've known you for a long time. I've never felt more understood by you than right now. And I was like, oh, boy. I'm like, even in the lows, God, you won't let me go. You're always working. Empathy for people who are pain. How are you with that? Lesson number four. Retreat to advance. in the midst of encouraging people to rest or encouraging people to have a Sabbath in your life, I've used this before in messages. This is simple and memorable. It's portable. Retreat to advance. This is a rhythm that Jesus modeled. You know it probably. Places like this in Luke chapter 5, verse 16, it says, but Jesus often withdrew to the wilderness to pray. Jesus modeled this. He would retreat in order to advance in his relationship with the Father. He would retreat in order to advance with his disciples. And you know this. You know these rhythms in your life. When you get overcooked in terms of your commitments, you retreat in order to advance. When you haven't seen enough of your family, you plan a little getaway, you retreat in order to advance. Hopefully, you who are married know that once a year you have to get away for at least a night, if not a weekend, with your spouse alone, without the kids, without anybody else, because you got to retreat in order to advance. And we know this, we look out in society and everybody, if you're a bit, there's lots of business owners, there's lots of leaders among us. And you know with your teams that when you start a new sales cycle, you gotta retreat to plan and to bond in order to advance as a team. We see this in, our two-time reigning and defending world champion Golden State Warriors. They retreat on their training camp in order to advance and bring another title. All the NFL teams right now are retreating in training camp in order to advance. This season, we even did it at a church. Last summer, we retreated into the gym. We packed ourselves like sardines into that gym all summer while this got redone. We retreated in order to come back here and advance as a church. Say amen if you appreciate what we did last summer. We know this. But God was saying, is this a regular enough rhythm in your life? Because you don't get to take sabbaticals all the time. But you understand how important this rhythm of retreating to advance. Do you do it enough personally? Just a daily, even a 5-minute retreat alone with the Lord in his word, in prayer, just listening. Listen, I was so convicted in my quiet time, my prayer time over this time. At the beginning, I started praying and I was asking, and God stopped me. He goes, how about for this season? Since 90% of your prayers to me are asking, how about for this time, you just listen? Don't ask me for anything this summer. Just listen. So I tried to do that kind of with my hands, and this is the stuff that he was teaching me. Retreat to advance. If we don't plan those ways, if we don't plan those things to retreat, they just don't happen. That was the fourth life lesson, retreat to advance. That's a rhythm of life. That's a whole series right there, and maybe we'll come back to that one. Here's the fifth one. We'll wrap up with this one. Family is the work of your life. Family is the work of your life. I'm going to keep this up here. 5 months before taking a couple of months off, I prayed, Lord, how do you want us to redeem this time? This sabbatical, what are we supposed to do? And the word that you just kept saying, family, your family. Since your kids have been born, you're gone pretty much every weekend. Saturday from noon till Sunday at 1, you're out. Friday night, you're kind of a ghost because you're looking through people because you're thinking about what you're going to say tomorrow and the next day. It's just like weekends, you're not really there. So redeem this time with your family. And I kept saying, okay, I got the family. Now what else? What else are we going to do? What else are we going to accomplish? And nothing else ever came. He was just, that's it. So we planned these things for our family, and we're out on this. And time and time and time and time again, God was saying, do you get it? Do you hear me? The church family is not the work of your life. It's a work of your life. But this, your actual family, is the work of your life. Yes, we're trying to make disciples here, but the first disciples that I've called you to make are these three little dudes right here. Their names are Trevor, Owen, and Cole. And I called you to serve your bride, her name is Bridget, and then my bride, the church, but in that order. Family is the work of your life, Tyler. Family is the work of your life, church. Jesus put it this way. Matthew 16, 18, he says, I will build my church, and the gates of Hades, the gates of hell, will not overcome it. So Jesus, mind the process, just put these two together. Jesus says, I'm the Lord, I will build my church, but Tyler, I've called you to build your family. I got the church covered, Jesus says. I'll build it, and I'll keep building it. I don't much need your help. I will build my church, but I've left you. I've called you. You've heard the phrase, bloom where you're planted. Our families are where he planted us. Your family is the work, not a work, the work of your life. Now, let me just say this. Some of us have been planted into families that were so destructive, so dysfunctional, so abusive, so evil, that it was wise for us to extract ourselves out of that family. And my hope and prayer is that God has surrounded you, surrounded us with a surrogate family, a new family, friends. Perhaps the church has become your family. But still, the principle holds true. Family is the work of your life. So what God was convicting me of were all the times in the midst of trying to build the church where I kind of got that order mixed up. And I don't think I'm alone in here, because we live in a society and a community here in the San Ramon Valley. I've lived almost my whole life here. You're movers, you're shakers, you're achievers. You love not just achieving, we love accolades and we love approval. And we love crushing it. And that's great. God gave you those gifts. But what God showed me is, he said, listen to me. If you build the biggest, best church in that family and you don't forget to work on your own family first, don't get to the end of the road and expect me to look at you and say, well done, good and faithful servant. Because your family is the work of your life. And I was reminded of this little mini message I heard probably 10 or 12 years ago from someone who was just teaching on one of Jesus' last words while he hung on the cross. Why does one of the last seven things he said when he was on the cross, when he looked down right before he says, it is finished, and breathes his last, and says, into your hands, Father, I commit my spirit. He looks to his mom and says, Mother, behold thy son. And then he looks at his beloved disciple, his best friend, John. He says, John, behold your mother. He takes care of his family. So while he's dying for the sins of the world, he takes care of his family because he knew and he modeled. Family is the work of your life. Don't miss it. God was saying, Tyler, don't miss it. I share that with you. Church, don't miss it. Those are the five things. I'll wrap up with this. Not to say that I don't love with an almost inexplicable, deep, abiding love, this church. 2 weeks ago, I was in this church in Minnesota. It's a church that I've been a part of for years because Bridget's parents go there, and I've been there many, many times. It's called Eagle Brook, and it's one of the fastest-growing churches in America. It's one of the largest churches in America. The weekend before I was there, they baptized 864 people. And they were going like, what do we do wrong? I mean, it's down from last year. And I'm like, oh. 7 campuses. Also, I love to go there. I love to worship. They do so many things right. But so we were back there, and they're like, hey, which service are we going to? I said, I don't care. I just want to go in there. So I come in there, and the worship set starts, and the music, you know, they're great. A bunch of hired musicians, and they do a great job. But the whole opening worship set, I was just bawling. And Bridget leans and says, are you okay? And I just said, I miss my church. I miss my church. This is great. I can't wait to get back to you. I can't wait to get back to my church. And I felt like God said, yep, through highs and through lows, God is always, and the way he worked on me is that I'm teaching you some stuff, but one of the biggest things I'm teaching you is just how much it's a good thing that you love your church and you can't wait to get back to him. And that we're meant to live together in community. And so now get ready to teach on that and lead us through that next season. Let's go to the Lord in prayer.